Return to Camp Blood, episode 77. Does the entire Friday the 13th franchise really suck? This episode is brought to you by FridayThirteenthFranchise.com.
This is cursed. Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
It's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing the biggest stay here.
Never come back again.
Today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, Eric.
What's up, y'all?
Nathan.
What's up, guys?
And counselor in training, Allison.
Hey, what's up, guys?
So, yeah, continuing our stall until E gets off R&R series of episodes that we're on, we're gonna take a look at a recent post over at cinemablend.com by Eric Eisenberg titled, Why the Entire Friday the 13th Franchise Really Kind of Sucks. In it, he tries to make the case that Friday the 13th has aged poorly and is irrelevant, among many other things. While he may have a good point here or there, we will yet again take up the mantle as the voice of the voiceless, pun totally intended. As always, we'll sort of skim the post and discuss, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/77. So, this guy posits what it tries to make the case that the entire franchise just sucks.
And that's his prerogative, man. You know, some people, that's just the way they feel. They feel that it's too campy and silly, but I don't think that's the case. I mean,
yeah, you know, I mean, one of his opening shots is that, you know, that they've aged incredibly poorly, you know, to the point, he says, where they demand cultural critical reevaluation. He says that there are a few series that's completely filled with dull, unmemorable, repetitive chapters. and though the titles have somehow managed to gain cult status, the reality is the whole thing really kind of sucks. So
kudos for writing a piece, but I mean, The way that I look at Friday the 13th, I look at it as great. And I look at a lot of horror movies that way, like Frankenstein, for example. And from the character that Mary Shelley wrote about the monster, to Boris Karloff's portrayal of the monster, to I, Frankenstein, man, there's a big difference. I mean, but it's done the exact same thing as the Jason character or Friday the 13th, in my opinion, anyway.
I don't really feel like they've aged that poorly. I mean, I guess some of the special effects in the early ones were kind of, well, I mean, not even really that, because they're done practically, and the bar was set high by Tom Savini in part one.
Yes, so it was.
I won't even say that the effects were that cheesy. The only time really for me where the effects come into play, and I thought they were kind of hokey, was in, you know, part three, where they purposefully, which, I mean, I get it. It was filmed for 3D, but where they purposefully sort of, you know, film certain scenes in a certain way to make it stand out, you know, when you're watching it in 3D. But otherwise, like, I can't think of any kill that looks just terrible, I guess, to the point where I'd say it has aged terribly.
Well, another thing to consider with that too is there's a big difference between 1980 and 1990. So obviously technology evolves, special effects evolve during that time too. So, and different people working on different films, you know, we didn't have Tom Savini on every single film. We had different FX people, you know, on almost every film. So we're going to get the differences that we see.
You have to look at it for what it is too. I mean, you know, the effects are appropriate for an 80s slasher film, which is what we're looking at. So if you're looking at it from like a millennial point of view, of course the effects are not going to stand up, but it's got that nostalgia that I mentioned in the last show, and it holds up for what it is. I mean, I don't think you can even compare it to the special effects that are out there right now.
Yeah, but for me, though, in some ways, like take Jason X or Freddy versus Jason, or even Jason Goes to Hell. And, you know, they, all three of those movies use the state-of-the-art CG and all this stuff. And while the movies look visually good, I still think that, you know, the practical effects and the, especially the first four, it looked more realistic. So for me, the older ones stand up more than the older ones, than the newer ones do. You know, except for when we get to the reboot, I think that one sort of,
we'll save that for the episode.
Yeah. It looked a lot better. You know, messed up my train of thought.
But they didn't go over the top with anything in 09, and they didn't really go outside the box with, you know, anything that we haven't already seen. It was pretty traditional stuff, and they didn't, you know, they didn't really use a ton of CGI like you would expect. And I thought it was all done really well with that film.
Yeah. And it harkens back to the older films as far as what the deaths look like. I mean, obviously there are some, and not to keep going on about the reboot, but obviously there are some scenes that they may not have been able to look good back then that look good now. But I think overall, like, you know, for me, the effects still, for the most part, hold up, even after, 36 years since part one came out.
100% so. I think the practical effects of the Friday the 13th series, you're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, everybody that has touched Friday the 13th as far as special effects and the gore factor, I mean, they're all stars. I mean, truly. And I mean, even in, Jason Goes to Hell, I mean, the tent scene where she gets torn in half, I think that looks amazing. It looks grotesque. I mean, so I think it holds up to time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that too. But in the big picture, I don't think that this guy's writing this article over special effects. You know, he's got a bigger problem, you know, outside of the special effects scene, which, you know, I can understand. I mean,
I was just going on the idea, like, usually when somebody says, you know, this movie doesn't hold up, you know, over time, it's normally because of the special effects. So that's kind of why I went there. I suppose that, you know, we could sort of talk about, you know, kind of the stories they were trying to tell back then. Cause you know, like he says in the article, the Friday films are placed, you know, historically in the middle of the, and these are his words, not mine. I'm not that good with words. It places it right in the middle of the rise of American conservatism in the '80s. You know, you got sexually promiscuous teenagers indirectly punished for their wicked ways, obviously by Jason. But I, you know, as we've seen with the recent election, like, American conservatism is still alive and very well, even in 2016, which, you know, not to say how I go one way or the other, it's still, you know, I still think these stories are just as relevant to the sort of morality, you know, that at least half the country has, you know, now as they did back in the '80s. So, I mean, even if you want to approach him saying that the stories don't hold up, or the films don't hold up story wise, I still think they do, because, you know, again, of, you know, he places it, like I said, in the middle of the rise of conservative or American conservatism. And we're still in the middle of all that now. You could even argue that, the sort of conservative movement now takes a harsher line on stuff like that than they did back in the '80s.
You know, that's I just don't understand that. you can't be old and wise without first being young and stupid. And discovering yourself and your body and maybe someone else's, whatever, that show that to that may not be, that may be the end of innocence, but then again, it shows them being young and stupid and being careless. And at that moment, bam, they're dead.
Being punished for it pretty much.
Well, I mean, would you say punished? Because Demon and Chuck got it pretty bad too.
Yeah, and but they were in, they may have not been, you know, sexually promiscuous, but they certainly were, you know, a part of the drug culture that, you know, the sort of moral majority was dead set against back then.
you know what? I didn't even think of, I didn't even realize that. I now Chuck and Demon, I believe that they were both written by the same person. I can't, don't quote me on that, 'cause I'm not for 100% positive. But again, I see it as them being in a vulnerable situation and it getting capitalized on. I mean, much more than anything else. I mean, it's the people, it really is the people that aren't paying attention that get it. I mean, so, and it's always been, so, I mean, do you, with his argument, from his point, it would, I mean, why not say that everything has been told before, if that makes sense?
Well, I mean, again, we were going on the premise that the movies don't hold up. And I think that, you know, from the couple vantage points that you could approach it, you know, through the special effects or the storylines or whatever, I still think that his, you know, his point fails.
Yeah, I mean, when I read the article, granted, I read it, you know, when he first put it out there, I can't remember how long ago that was, but I read the majority of it. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, there is a point. I understand the point that he's trying to make. I don't have to agree with it. But in the big picture, I think it boils back to some of the talks that we've had, you know, on the films that are the least popular. You know, once you get past, you know, basically what the majority of people would say would be part seven, you know, 8, 9 and X, you know, are not that great of films. I mean, so when he talks about, you know, some of the things in the article, it makes me revert back to our conversations about those films.
As far as the story, yes, it definitely holds up. I mean, I can't agree with what he says about, you know, not being relevant. You know, if you want to talk about continuity, that is obviously a problem. That's a different discussion. But I mean, the stories are good, in my opinion. Most of the characters are likable, and I find somebody to root for in every movie. But honestly, I mean, the whole point is Jason, right? I mean, of course, he's going to come in there. He's going to kill as many teenagers as possible. People are going to have sex. They're going to do drugs. And it, of course, it's done every single time, but that's what people wanted to see back then, and that's what they got. So, yeah, I mean, I think it holds up. I really do.
Man, maybe we should have had somebody younger on here. I get the idea, like, that the guy writing this is probably in his 20s, maybe, because I can't really see, and that's not like a rip against him or anything, but like I can't see like someone, you know, a little older than their 20s, like saying some of this stuff. But you know, for me, like I said, I think no matter what angle you hit it at, like it all still holds up and it's all still, you know, sort of relevant, at least for me. You know, I've talked about that, especially within the, I think the episode where he had Jeremy from Geekish Cast on, that was episode 70, where we were talking about, you know, is it time to put Friday the 13th to rest? I'd sort of touched on that same idea, but, let me kind of go further into this article here. So each and every chapter is not so much filled with characters as it is sacks of blood set up to be hacked with a machete. And at no point does any filmmaker in the franchise make even a reasonable attempt to create interesting people to fight back against Jason. And he includes Tommy Jarvis in there because he's not really known for much more than repeatedly surviving. Now I do agree with him on this last sentence there. He says about Tommy Jarvis, the series couldn't even make proper use of his talent for mask making. I mean, like, you know, I think we had some of our part five theories that involved Tommy Jarvis using his, you know, mass making talent. But I would agree with him on that one small point in this whole paragraph. Because like Allison was saying a minute ago, like, you know, you can always find somebody in the film to root for. And like, yes, like most of the time we're pro Jason. I mean, he even mentions that. But it's weirdly pro Jason perspective that ultimately highlights what's wrong with the basic premise of every film in the franchise. So he's even like has an issue with us liking Jason, I guess. But, you know, for me, Tommy was more than just like a, you know, passing character that his only real claim to fame was that he'd survived, especially the Tommy in part five by John Shepard, man. That his performance in that movie is probably some of the best in the whole franchise, even though he has like less speaking parts.
24 lines.
Yeah.
24 words.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm sure if I really thought about it, I could find more people in the series like that, like Adrian King's character, Alice in part one, Jenny. Obviously those are like sort of the final girls and boys, but, you know, even in Takes Manhattan, Remy's character, she's, maybe the actress playing her overacted her a little bit, but I think the general Tina Shepherd, like, he's so full of shit. He's so full of shit.
You're forgetting Tina from Pinehurst.
Well, yeah, Miss Debbie Sue.
Okay, for the slasher genre, you have very little time for character building. It's the characters, you only have one protagonist, or actually two, Jason and the final person, or final two, whatever, or final two and Reggie. But you don't have much time for, there's so little bit of story you can fit into 90 minutes. So you've got to skip all of that and just get to the shit that makes sense. And it's it's separating the pack, the herd, and picking them off one by one in creative ways. I mean, and it just so happens that the antagonist in this story wears a hockey mask and doesn't speak. I mean,
So Nate, name some of your more liked characters.
I mean, you know, like Crazy Ralph.
Wait, what's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you?
You'll never come back again.
It's got a death curse.
And I mean, I love Jeff and Sandra in the second. I thought that they had, I loved their chemistry. I was jealous of that whenever I was a kid, you know. There's Shelley and Vera. I mean, there's only a small amount of time. So either you're going to fill it with humor, sex, and then, or drugs, or slight scares, jump scares, essentially. Then you get to the killing, or you sprinkle the killing throughout each of the recipes. So, I mean, Friday the 13th may not be gone with the fucking wind, but it's still worth watching and enjoying it for what it is. That's what I think anyway.
It's not even really about filling time or filling gaps, whatever you want to call it. We're talking about Camp Crystal Lake. We're talking about camp counselors, campers, machete, you know, people dying in the woods. It is what it is. I mean, so if you don't like watching that, then I guess so be it. But there's always going to be a time and a place for it. And a lot of people are fans, and, you know, it's a $1 billion industry, and you either like it or you don't. It's pretty much that simple.
I agree.
Because if you're going to pick on Friday, you got to pick on Halloween. You got to pick on Nightmare on Elm Street, not to veer off the topic, but each of those, you know, they have sequels that aren't very good. Just like Friday, they have some that aren't very good. So you're going to pick on Friday, pick on the whole slasher, you know, the whole slasher scene.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I think the author here like totally misses the whole point of a slasher movie. Like, this is not supposed to be high art. No, like, nobody in these movies even thinks that they're going to like get put in for any kind of award. I just think he misses the whole point of the slasher genre as a whole. And, you know, there are still new slashers being developed and put out, and they all follow the same fucking formula. You know, teenagers not being where they're supposed to be, and they fucking die because of it, and maybe one or two of them, you know, overcomes the bad guy at the end. Like,
yeah. And I mean, the same, you know, when you talked about the conservative issues and things like that, I mean, those things were going on regardless whether people wanted to talk about it or watch it. But in this case, a lot of people wanted to watch it, you know, almost 13 times now.
Yep.
I mean, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but not one of them has ever not turned a profit, and substantially in most cases.
Yeah, I mean, they've all been profitable. I mean, not to mention, you know, the collectible industry, you know, all that, all the stuff that comes along with that, the posters and the figures. I mean, we're talking, this is a $1 billion franchise. You know, granted, there might have been, you know, a couple films that some of us might think are lame or whatever, don't really care for, and that's fine. You know, those are going to happen when you're cranking them out, you know, left and right, and different people working on them. But bottom line is, there was still the audience, or they wouldn't have kept cranking them out.
Yep, that is a true statement. So let's, Allison, you got any more to say about the character issue before I move on?
No, I mean, really, you know, when I read the article the first time, it didn't occur to me at all that he didn't like the characters, that he didn't think that the special effects held up. I just took it that the guy is not a fan at all of the Friday the 13th series. And he really just used the article to point that out. That was really the only thing that stood out to me in the whole article.
Yeah, that seems to be a point about a lot of these articles slamming the franchise. The point that they try to make, or at least subconsciously, I guess, or however you would say that. So moving on here, when there is no entertainment or emotional value to be gained from following the protagonist in a horror story, you rip out every bit of suspense. So like, I mean, yeah, I understand that the slasher fits under a horror genre. But I don't think that, I mean, these are entertaining. And especially if you watch, you know, part two, that final chase scene with Jenny and Jason, I'm sorry. That's still suspenseful every time that I watch it.
100%.
Absolutely.
And even part one, like before the killer is revealed, or even during when Alice is fighting with Pamela, like every time I watch it, like, I mean, obviously it doesn't hit me the same way it did the first time, but you know, I'm still kind of, you know, sitting up in my seat a little bit, watching more intently, you know, even though I know everything that's about to happen. Even the chase scene and Jason goes to hell to take a, you know, a later film. Say what you will about that movie. I think we've said a lot about it, but, even the final chase scene in that was pretty suspenseful. If you ask me,
it was, and I mean, it's funny. I mean, you know, what gets me the most about the part two chase scene is definitely Manfredini's music. And Steve Miner's cinema, his direction, and this whom the cinematographer. I mean, it was just well done. I mean, that I think fits in greatest top 50 of all time. I mean, there's no denying it. It gets your heart racing anyway. And you know, it's just but then again, there's iconic scenes. It's funny, since we've been doing the show and watching the movies with watching them more intently and trying to pick up on little things. I've picked up on so many things that I never saw before. I mean, you know, I'm looking as deep into what is portrayed on the screen as I can, but
I think you have to rate the chase scene in part four up there as well. I mean, you know, you've got Corey Feldman, you know, there's a kid in danger. Jason's going to kill this kid. I mean, you know, chasing her from house to house and the, you know, Eric Anderson, he's killing me. I mean, that's one of my favorite chase scenes in all of the Jason movies, honestly.
Well, 100%. I mean, the scene with the hammer in the back of his neck, him coming after Tommy, little Tommy, Tommy shaving his head. I mean, it is, it's, there's iconic shots there too. I mean, I don't know, maybe this person, I mean, I don't know why they'd be writing about horror if they weren't involved in horror, but maybe this person's more like a Japanese, folklore horror fan, you know, I mean, and doesn't appreciate the slasher genre. And that's just what it seems to me. And no discredit to him. I mean, that's his prerogative, but I don't see how you can say that this series is tired by any means. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, even talking, going back to the deaths and stuff, he talks about the fact that, you know, almost every death is a result of a stab or a slice with some kind of blade or instrument, and the bulk of the rest just involves some kind of head smashing. He points out like a couple of his favorite kills, which is the scene in Manhattan with Jason punching the guy's head off and then him dumping a woman's head in the nitrogen and smashing it in Jason X, which while Julius's death is hilarious, I think it's one of the weaker kills in my opinion, but you know what, you like what you like.
100%.
But I like, you know, I guess he's trying to say that the kind of kills that Jason does is, you know, just tired and recycled and stuff. And like, while I know you do see some of that, and you know, even some of it's done on purpose to pay homage to the films that came before,
and right now I call bullshit. Why? Because the first fucking 10 minutes of Friday the 13th, 2009, tell me you didn't wince when the dude got his leg caught in a bear trap. Tell me you didn't think, oh God, that's nasty at the sleeping.
Oh yeah. While he had to watch his girlfriend burning to death in a fucking sleeping bag.
Yeah.
That was brutal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the point.
This so guy's obviously not much of a horror fan. I mean, if you go to his stories on Cinema Blend, he really doesn't write a lot about horror. He seems to be more of like a science fiction fan or like a Marvel Comics fan. And, you know, that's fine if he wants to write about that kind of stuff. But, you know, I don't like those kind of movies. So why do I need to write about Marvel Comics movies? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, because further on down the article, he talks about how Jason X is probably one of his more favorite films in the series. So if he's primarily writing about stuff like that, it makes sense, you know, because it takes place in space.
That's what it takes to get a good Friday review from
whoever this is. Eric Eisenberg. Yeah, and then to carry on the character conversation, he goes on to say that basically that the films are follow a bunch of essentially nameless protagonists facing off against a faceless mute murderer with tried and true killing methods. And he says you get a whole lot of repetitive, unremarkable sequels, which, you know, even, you know, when we go down the line and start naming movies we don't like as much, like I would hardly call any of them unremarkable, you know, because the times, I think I can speak for most of us here, the times where we really dislike the films are when they try something extremely different from what we're used to. Those are the times where I think collectively we start, you know, saying, I don't know about this. But even the ones that we don't like, I still wouldn't say that they're unremarkable.
But once again, you got to understand, I mean, when you go to see a Friday the 13th, you know what you're going to watch. Just like if you went and watched a Jaws movie, you know you're going to watch a shark eat people. I mean, so yeah, of course it's going to be repetitive, but that's what people want to see. So, I mean, how are you going to argue that?
Yeah, that's true enough.
You know, I mean, Jason has his formula, just like every serial killer in every one of these slasher, you know, franchise. Like Nate just said, I mean, you know what you're going to see. You know what's going to happen. You know everything that's going to happen. So, I mean, expecting some kind of Oscar-worthy performances out of these characters, I mean, it's kind of unrealistic.
Yeah, yeah. And then he says, like, this was put out actually like a month ago. And he says, leading up to writing the article, he watched all of them in the weeks leading up to him writing, or at least this getting published. And he says he had a hard time telling you the key differences between the first five sequels on beyond what Jason wore on his head. But see, this screams to me like, you know, you have a person who doesn't like a certain genre of music. And then they listen to, you know, a handful of songs in that genre they don't like. And what is the first thing they say? All this shit sounds the same. When you're a fan of that genre, you know the differences in the songs, you know. You know, I listen to a lot of metal, but there's people that fucking hate metal. And the thing that they say is, I can't understand what they're saying or screaming, and all this shit sounds the same. So you have a person who is clearly not a fan of slasher movies writing an article on one of the more popular slasher franchises. I don't understand it.
No, I don't either. And it's not like the, you know, and I'm not dissing science fiction. I love a lot of the genre, but
Battlestar,
if you're going to equate Friday as being tired and cliche, do you get much more cliche than science fiction either?
Oh, I know. Remember when sci-fi used to show, and maybe they still do, but remember when they used to show all them made for TV sci-fi flicks that they produced? They were all fucking horrible. Of course, I would be suffering from the same problems as this guy. I don't watch a lot of science fiction outside of Battlestar, the new one, and, you know, like Star Trek and Star Wars. So for me to go in there and critique these movies is fucking stupid because I don't watch a lot of it. But to me, all those movies are stupid and cheesy. Whereas I'm sure you will find someone somewhere on a podcast the same as this talking about how fucking great those old sci-fi movies are from the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, it's all subjective. I mean, you know, you like what you like, and you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, ad nauseum here, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to try to make sense of a franchise like Friday the 13th if you're not a fan. I mean, you know, I can tell you differences in, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right off the bat. And, you know, all these, like you're talking about, like the Star Trek shows and all the crazy science fiction movies. I can't tell you anything about those kind of movies. So, you know, it's all subjective.
Yeah, and eventually they all blend together for you, and you'd be writing an article same as this dude talking about how much Sci-Fi Channel movies suck and how they. He says, in a ridiculous twist of fate, 2001's Jason X is arguably the best Friday the 13th movie, simply because it's being set in outer space.
Sci-fi geek.
If you're a metalhead, metal's awesome.
Sure.
If you're a country fan, not so much. I mean, I mean, there's anomalies everywhere, but I mean, you could suffice it to say either way. I mean, even though it's a stereotype, I mean, I'm not going to knock Jason X because I love it. Is it one of the better written? And not so much. I mean,
hey, you know, but Jason X might be like on the lower half of your list for best Fridays, but it's still a fun ass movie to watch to me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I never said it wasn't fun to watch. I love watching it. The point about them wearing the different colors and matched up with Star Trek and that Easter egg, and hell, I didn't know that.
I know Bobby did a good job uncovering that one. That was a good stuff.
Yes, it was. I mean, there's not a movie in the series that I can say I hate. I mean, and that's a fact.
Yeah. So we didn't have any listener mail this week. So we're going to move on to final thoughts. But before we do, let's hear a word from our sponsor. All right. Final thoughts. Does the entire Friday the 13th franchise really kind of suck?
I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with Mr. Eisenberg. I do not think the entire franchise sucks.
I got to disagree also, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here.
nobody's going to flesh out their answer here. any more jabs you want to take at this?
I could jab all night long, but you know what? That's not the point.
Hey, you don't mess with Nate's Friday. You just don't do it. And I mean, fuck no, this shouldn't be put to rest any more than any other story that's been told a thousand times before. I mean, it's cultural. I mean, Jason will outlive me. I can guarantee it. I mean, even though he doesn't ever die, but still, you get my point, I hope.
He definitely shouldn't be put to rest ever. I mean, if you want to space out, you know, the films, I mean, just like we haven't had one since 2009, we're going to get one in 2017. Okay, so, you know, we've got a few years in between compared to back in the 80s when they're cranking them out, you know, year after year. Hey, I get that. But, you know, there's money to be made. There's, you know, people that want to watch. He should never be put to rest ever. So, I mean, if someone disagrees with that, then, you know, they obviously don't know the big picture.
All right, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to this show. If you want to support us financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. If you have a question or a theory, you can hit us up at the website in the contact tab or comment on the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/77. Also, please consider checking out some of the other shows under the Astro Panda umbrella over at astropandaproductions.com. A special thanks goes out to the Downriver Rat for an intro and outro music. You can check his stuff out at thedownriverrat.com. Until next time.